Greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Oh, anyhow. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Buongiorno. Half a day. Guten Tag. Sawadi Karap. Salam. Shalom. Peace now. Go vegan. Peace. How? Go vegan. Yes, from the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison, Kilitary Industrial Corporation in the bribocratic corruptocracy of the United States of Listeria. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. A big shout out to everyone at the Animal Rights Conference, AR 2007, this weekend in LA, a gathering of modern heroes and the FBI agents who want to arrest them. For the next hour, your radio, your PC, your laptop, your iPod, your satellite reception device, in fact, the entire Air America network will be veganized for your protection, which is more than you get from your government. Maybe it's busy protecting you, all right, protecting the Deutschland, protecting you from, I don't know what, paper cuts maybe, from all the money sent to Arachnam. You know, you could have gotten paper cuts from that money, so I guess the government is good for something. And also, don't get any paper cuts on the shredded Constitution. Be careful, okay? No protection for you. For the bigger issues in life from your government. No, you don't get protection from meat and dairy, who have already infiltrated our borders. They lurk everywhere. Yes, meat and dairy. The terrorists among us, right at the top of the least wanted list of the Vegan Bureau of Investigation. Remember, you're either with the vegans or you're with the terrorists, meat and dairy killing more Americans than all wars combined. On the attack, heart attack, that is, cancer among us. And when your government won't protect you, actually, it even fights against you. It fights testing now for the 100% fatal mad cow disease, where one bite of a hamburger or a cow steak flesh, if BSE contaminated, can be fatal to the human consumer. That's one bite. Yes, why would we take a chance and have another hamburger or steak? Why would we feed that to our children now when one bite can be fatal? And, we know that mad cow disease is in the United States herd, and that such cows do make it to the food chain. Japan tests all of its cows. The United States fights to test its cows. Right now, China this past week said it's not even going to take our chicken feet and pig's ears anymore. Ooh. What could be wrong with them, huh? And what would they come back as from China, huh? The country that gives us plastic as food. So how do you protect yourself? How do you protect your children? Well, you go vegan. How did you get brainwashed into this corporate diet of death anyway? You know, what impropaganda did it? Where now you're susceptible. One bite can be fatal. And it's a disease that can be dormant for many years before the symptoms arise, before certain death, which follows dementia. Now, if you need proof of the presence of mad cow disease in the United States adult population, you need look no further than the behavior of George W. Bush and Dictator Cheney. And can you blame the cows now? I mean, such beautiful, gentle creatures. Can you blame the cows for finally getting mad? I mean, look how much they put up with, and finally now they're getting mad. And I can see, there might be a little disappointment on their part in human behavior, considering 10 billion land animals are tortured and murdered and eaten annually in this country. And for what? to sicken and kill the human population and waste resources to destroy the environment. It turns out that the best way to protect ourselves from cancer and heart disease is also the best way to protect ourselves from global warming. Are you listening, Mr. Gore? The most inconvenient truth is the best protection, the way to cool our globe down, is to go vegan. Now, also for years, we've marched and we've protested to a deaf and blind government. We've marched for less violence in the world. Well, you can take action today. There can be less violence in the world today if you go vegan and remove the murder victim from your plate. You know, your food was someone with a tortured life, I must say. Every day is 9/11 for the animals. Every factory farm concentration camp is a Auschwitz. And last week, for a weekend outing, I visited, not the worst of the worst, but I guess the best of the best. A writer friend who was writing an article asked me to accompany her to a visit. It was a visit the farm day, an organic dairy farm, as if, I'm skeptical of animal products that are organic, meat or dairy. But okay, an organic dairy farm in Petaluma, run by a Franciscan order. Franciscan, so as in St. Francis, the patron saint of animals, for whom San Francisco is named. Yes. Well, I don't know that I could actually handle visiting a torturous, highly confined factory farm, but what could a Franciscan dairy farm be like? Well, let's see. After all, St. Francis is the patron saint of animals. There were all sorts of stories about him, how he, there are stories about him with rabbits and a wolf and birds. And one of those that I saw on the internet, Father Francis and his companions were making a trip through the Spoleto Valley near the town of Bevania. Suddenly, Francis spotted a great number of birds of all varieties. There were doves and crows and all sorts of birds swept up in the moment. Francis left his friends in the road and ran after the birds, who patiently waited for him. He greeted them in his usual way, expecting them to scurry off in the air, but they didn't. They stayed around, and he said to them, "My brother and sister birds, you should praise your Creator and always love him. He gave you feathers for clothes, wings to fly, and all of the things that you need. It's God who made you noble among all creatures, making your home in thin, pure air. Without sowing or reaping, you receive God's guidance and protection." So said St. Francis. So I thought, well, okay, I'm visiting a Franciscan farm. And so visiting the farm, I was struck actually by all the birds who had been barbecued and were being eaten. Some here just didn't quite seem to be complimentary to yeah, so it's, yeah, so now, there we were. And you know, I'm not just saying all of this. I'm not just saying all of this because...
Oh, new one. I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
I just find the concept of a church barbecue slightly bizarre. That barbecue sauce must have dripped on the Bible and covered up Genesis book 1, verse 29. I suggest you have a look at it and see. It's the diet prescribed there. No mention of meat or dairy there. It's all, herbs, plants, seeds, trees. That's what it should be. So I don't know. Also, what about that thou shalt not kill part? Huh? Anyway, some things get overlooked. And the people there, I think, overlook the grim realities of what seems to be an innocent dairy, raising cows for milk production. It seems, nobody gets hurt, right? Well, I mean, there's the cow has to be impregnated, and some might consider that rape. There was a worker there who said that the humans try to impregnate the cows a couple of times. If that doesn't work, they have bulls for that purpose. Of course, some bulls stay there for that purpose. Others get sold off to become meat. And then when the bulls become 2 years old, they get a little ornery, so they get shipped off to be slaughtered also. So in a sense, there's a rape. The impregnation comes while they're lactating, which is a heavy burden on the cows. Then there's the kidnapping, mother and child separated pretty much at birth, and then eventually, the murder of all the cows. All of them were on death row there. So I left the best of the best feeling very sad about the experience. Actually, I thought I needed a joke. I may go over for a couple of seconds in time on this, but I was tuned to Air America, and I listened to Tom Hartman regularly, and so I was surprised. Could have been uplifted to hear a joke, but I heard a joke I've been making on my program for a number of years regarding impeachment. Perhaps it was a listener of mine passing the joke on to you, but I think it went through an unfortunate metamorphosis. The original impeachment joke offered ingredients for a refreshing beverage: organic peach juice, organic mint, peach mint. So, but it lost its humor when applied to dairy, or as suggested, as a Ben and Jerry's flavor. I visited that organic dairy, and I don't think it quite worked that way. So anyway, it's Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Yes, Dr. Gary Francione coming up on today's show. You won't want to miss this academic. Stay with us.
M-E-A-T-S-T-I-N-K-S. Meat Sinks.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Yes, the first vegan program.
McDonald's, yuck.
Sometimes it just slips out. What can you do? It's the truth. The truth slips out on this program. Oh, you're going to hear an interesting perspective coming up in just a little while from Dr. Gary Francione, a professor of law and, teacher of animal rights and law for over 20 years. So it'll be interesting to hear his perspective on animal rights coming up today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. I wanted to look over a couple of events going on that you may wish to be aware of in the vegan world, globalized by Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And if you're interested in what's going on around the New York City area, we are on WWRL there now. I suggest a website, humanenyc.org, humanenyc.org. The Tofu Festival is coming to the L.A. area. That is August 18th and 19th in Little Tokyo. That's always a lot of fun. So you might go to tofufestival.com. And, this program runs at various times throughout the weekend. And in South Florida, it's Saturday afternoon. So if you're listening on WINZ in South Florida this evening, today is Saturday. And Dr. T. Colin Campbell, author of the China Study, will be delivering the keynote address to the National Health Association, that's healthscience.org, the annual conference in Hallandale, and this lecture is free and open to the public, so I suggest that you you visit, okay? It's 7:30 this evening at the Hemispheres Condominium Ballroom, 1950 South Ocean Drive in Hallandale, okay? So the lecture is free, it's open to the public, it's healthcare means nutrition care, not disease care. T. Colin Campbell, author of the China Study, the most extensive study of health and diet. Okay, what else? Oh, now if you're listening to this program in Los Angeles, you're listening on Sunday evening. And tomorrow, being Monday, there will be a demonstration at UCLA against vivisection on the UCLA campus. That is tomorrow, Monday, July 23rd at 11 a.m. UCLA Medical Facilities meeting at the corner of LeConte and Westwood Boulevard in Westwood Village tomorrow. And the Co-Opportunity has its all-member forum in Santa Monica, Monday, July 30th, 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Santa Monica Synagogue, 1448 18th Street at Broadway. I suggest that since co-ops have mission statements, you suggest that to live up to the mission statement, the co-op dump all meat and dairy. More after this from V-Dog.
Over 10 generations of dogs have thrived on V-Dog, the original vegetarian dog food from England. V-Dog now manufactured and available in the U.S., Vegan Formula V-Dog. Complete protein nutrition with all essential amino acids, vitamins, and minerals for your dog to thrive. Winner of the PETA Prague Award for no animal ingredients, no animal testing, but test V-Dog on your dog, and if he or she doesn't love it, we'll refund your money. Benefits could be improved dental hygiene, digestion, weight management, healthier skin and coat, and increased energy. Not part of the pet food recall, V-Dog maintains the highest industry testing standards. Order V-Dog online at www.vdogfood.com or call 1-888-280-8364. Available in 5.5 or 33-pound bags, free shipping. Check the website for stores, including Whole Foods Sacramento. Call 1-888-280-8364 or visit vdogfood.com.
And from the Humane Education Network, this word about, well, you know, about dog and cat fur from China. It's a terrible situation. And Chinese fur farms, screaming dogs grabbed by both legs, slammed to the ground, hit violently with a stick. It's terror. Well, there is the Dog and Cat Fur Prohibition Enforcement Act, H.R. 891, and the Humane Education Network is asking you to support that, and that would be through your U.S. senator or your U.S. representative. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and by the way, this is a grassroots effort to bring a voice of compassion on the air, animal rights, a vegan radio show, and it costs $200,000 for production and distribution of this program. So I ask your assistance in doing this. I'm looking for 200 Make It Happen vegans, each of whom might raise $1,000 each, and there we can cover our costs. None of that goes for salaries, so you can donate online at goveganradio.com. or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. Okay, so please help with a tax-deductible donation and help us keep this program on the air for the animals, okay? Really would appreciate that. Does that mean I still have time, or I have just a little bit of time? So, I mean, I'm on Air America, so I should say go vegan. What do we want? Animal liberation. When do we want it? Now. Professor Francione coming up.
I'm a vegan because meat hurts animals.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and I'm glad you joined us today. This is going to be interesting and enlightening. Today we have Dr. Gary Francione with us, distinguished professor of law, and Nicholas D.B. Katzenbach, scholar of law and philosophy, Rutgers University, where he has taught since 1989. He was articles editor of the Virginia Law Review, and after graduating, clerked for the U.S. Court of Appeals, but also Sandra Day O'Connor. And Professor Francione has been teaching animal rights and the law for more than 20 years and was the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. He is a prolific writer of books, including Introduction to Animal Rights, Your Child or the Dog, Animals, Property, and the Law, Rain Without Thunder, The Ideology of the Animal Rights Movement, and Vivisection and Dissection in the Classroom, A Guide to Conscientious Objection. If I go on with the resume, we'd be out of time, so I better say welcome, Dr. Francione. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for having me, Bob. about.
It's great to have you here today. So maybe you, having considered animal rights all these years and teaching it and all, might give us a little basic course. And what are animal rights to begin with?
Why don't you ask me a simple question to start off with?
Okay. All right. What did you have for breakfast today, Gary? it was probably vegan, right?
So. It was probably, yes. I've been a vegan for 25 years, Bob. I have never knowingly put anything into or onto my body that is not 100% animal-free in a quarter of a century now.
Right. Now, but what led you to this thinking? I mean, you know, to dedicate your life to animals and the law and animal rights and eventually an abolitionist perspective. Where did it begin?
Well, it's interesting, and let me just preface it by saying... five of our dogs are sitting in this room with me right now, and if a bark occurs, I can't control it, so I apologize.
No, no, no. Dogs are welcome. Barking okay. is welcome here.
All right. Well, I grew up eating meat. We never had any animals in the house. My brother was asthmatic, so we really never had any companion animals in the house. And my dad was involved in the restaurant business and very, very much in the meat business, so it was not something I thought a great deal about. When I was at the University of Virginia Law School, I was exposed to some folks who were there, a woman named Cora Diamond, who was a philosophy professor, who started talking to me about vegetarianism, and one of my classmates at the University of Virginia Law School took me to a slaughterhouse outside of Richmond, Virginia. And that immediately caused me to become a vegetarian, and I mean by that I stopped eating all meat, poultry, pork. I ate shellfish, I think, for a while longer, and dairy. And then when I started learning more about fish and the ability of fish to feel pain, and I started learning about how dairy was produced. Remember, we're going back to 1977, 78, I do not believe I knew what the word vegan was back then, and I was not aware, I confess my ignorance, I really wasn't aware that there were people who didn't eat any animal products whatsoever. But as I read more and learned more, and recognized that there was really no difference between a piece of meat and a glass of milk, except the glass of milk probably had more suffering in it than a piece of meat had, I decided that all of it was just not acceptable.
A glass of milk had more suffering than a piece of meat. A lot of people think the reverse. They drink milk and think, oh, nobody's getting hurt. But
quite the contrary. I mean, as a matter of fact, I say in Introduction to Animal Rights, there probably is more suffering in a glass of milk than in a pound of steak, and that is based on my many years of going around and visiting places and visiting slaughterhouses and visiting beef farms and visiting dairy farms. And I think that dairy farms represent some of the most outrageous cruelty that you can possibly imagine. Anybody who believes that there is a moral difference between a cup of ice cream and a thick, juicy steak is deluding herself incredibly. There is no difference. As a matter of fact, if someone put a steak and a dairy product in front of me and said you have to eat one or the other, let's say they were using coercion and put a gun to my head and said you have to eat one or the other, if my decision were based solely on suffering, I would probably eat the meat before I drank the dairy.
Yeah, it's the reverse of what some people think.
Well, there are. I mean, I find it curious that there are so many people in the movement who regard themselves as vegetarians, and then but they're not vegans. And to me, that's as peculiar as saying, well, you know, I eat small cows, but I don't eat large cows, or I eat spotted cows, but I don't eat cows with without spots. I mean, it's
right.
I
don't even accept the word vegetarian unless it means vegan, because
I agree with you.
You know, I mean, you could have a cheese omelet and a glass of milk and say you're vegetarian, and there's still the animal suffering, the health risk, and the environmental devastation. So, well, you know, what's the point?
And it's distressing. But you know, Bob, what's distressing to me is I've been doing this now for 25 years, and I don't regard this, and I'm sure you don't either. I mean, this my veganism is not a matter of lifestyle, or you know, it's not a lifestyle matter. This is a deeply spiritual commitment that I have. I am no different from the Orthodox Jew who observes kashrut very seriously, or the Jehovah's Witness who will not take a blood transfusion. bringing animal products into my body, it results in a physical injury, an impairment of my body. This is not a matter of lifestyle. This is a matter of who I am as a human being. But what concerns me is I've been doing this now for 25 years, and the number of people I have found in the movement, and I use that term loosely, who are really committed to veganism, it's really quite small. There are a lot of people who are vegetarians, which means, you know, they don't eat one thing or the other. they don't eat beef, but they eat fish.
According to you, though, they're choosing even a more cruel lifestyle. If they're vegan,
right? I agree. And what's very distressing to me is the fact the movement itself portrays veganism as some sort of extreme choice. In my judgment, veganism ought to be the default position. It ought to be, you know, it ought to be the non-negotiable.
It's normal. It's normal to be vegan, right?
Right. It ought to be the non-negotiable moral baseline of the movement. I just did an interview in The Vegan, which is a British magazine that was, as you know, started many years ago by Donald Watson, who coined the term vegan. And I was recently interviewed in there and took the position that, look, veganism ought to be the moral baseline. This nonsense, this position that only the heroic and only the really strong can be vegan, that's nonsense. I mean,
we both ate meat every day of our lives, Gary. I won a hamburger eating contest, so. You know, here I am because of the moral conviction. One night I looked at my plate, I saw a murder victim, I said, I can't participate in this, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it was not a gradual thing. I mean, when I went to the slaughterhouse, I stopped eating meat altogether, and then once I learned enough about what was going on in the dairy industry, and actually had a conversation with my former colleague of many, many, many years ago, Ingrid Newkirk, whom I had met in Washington, D.C. in 1982, and we talked about veganism, that was basically the end of it. I have not, and neither has Anna Charlton, my partner, knowingly consumed an animal product in 25 years. It wasn't one of these things where we said, well, we've got to be gradual or what. You know, morality is morality. If something's wrong and you can't justify it and you take morality seriously, you stop it.
Exactly.
And so in 25 years, we haven't knowingly eaten an animal product.
So being vegan to you is the moral lifestyle, the ethical lifestyle, the basic.
Well, yes. I mean, it's a spiritual commitment. It's a commitment to the health of my body. It's a commitment to nonviolence. I mean, I'm very much a nonviolent person. I'm very, very much opposed to violence. And so to me, veganism represents my acceptance of a nonviolent lifestyle. It represents my commitment to the abolitionist movement. My view is we have no business using animals, however, quote, humanely, end quote, we treat them. We have no business using them.
Now, there's a lot of controversy now. You say humanely. There, a lot of meats are getting labeled humane, and there's a humane movement now, supposedly, labeling meat as humane.
Yes, and it's a travesty. It's ridiculous, and I think that that the people who are involved with it should be ashamed. It's something that the movement has embraced quite adamantly, both here and in Britain. You have Freedom Food in Britain. You have the Animal Compassionate label here that is developed by Whole Foods. You have Certified Raised and Humane. Certified, raised, and handled humane.
But there's always the betrayal and the killing at the end. Gary,
stay
with us through the break.
Okay.
Stay with us through the break.
And hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or dog. Guns.
Why does Canada let the baby seals be killed? Shame on you, Canada.
We continue on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the website goveganradio.com. You can make an online donation, tax deductible, to help support this program, production costs, distribution costs. We're on the Air America Network, XM Satellite, and it costs us $200,000 per year to do it with no major corporate backing. This is, the opportunity comes up to do something for animals. I say yes and worry about how I'm going to do it later. And the value of it is we're able to hear people like Dr. Gary Francione with a perspective on animal rights over the past 20 years, distinguished law professor, Rutgers University. And Dr. Francione, before the break, we were talking about, the website is abolitionistapproach.com, abolitionistapproach.com for Dr. Francione. And Gary, before the break, we were talking about, right now there seems to be a movement toward more humane meat, more humane slaughter, whatever that would be, because, I don't know, killing is killing to me. But talk to me about humane slaughter and all of this, and your approach is more of abolitionist, you say.
Well, yeah, I mean, my view is we ought not to be using them, however humanely we may be treating them. But the focus of my work for the past 20, 25 years has been basically animal welfare doesn't work. Animal welfare does not provide any significant level of protection to animals, and the reason is because animals are commodities, they're property. It costs money to protect their interests, so as a result, the only time we protect their interests is when it provides an economic benefit for us. I mean, look even at the campaigns that are being continued now by groups like HSUS and PETA with respect to the gestation crate and controlled atmospheric killing of poultry. These are all campaigns that are based on economic benefits for the industry. That is, the animal welfare organizations like HSUS and PETA have effectively become partners of the animal exploiters, and they're saying, look, if you adopt these supposedly more humane methods, you'll increase your profit, you'll decrease carcass damage, you'll decrease worker injuries, you'll increase animal health overall, you'll make more money. I think that's a really terrible argument to be making. I think we have to look at this whole, and look, the bottom line is, Bob, the whole humane movement, this whole humane meat movement, the conscientious omnivore movement that Peter Singer and others are promoting, is having the effect, and it's unquestionable, of moving people backward, not forward, where people who are moving in a vegan direction are now eating meat again because they've got people in the animal movement telling them, oh, you can do this now. You can discharge your obligations to animals humanely if you buy animals that are raised in certain ways or have certain, if you buy them at Whole Foods or if you get them labeled in particular ways. I think it's important for us to understand that there's a zero-sum game going on here. There's limited time, there's limited resources, and we're killing billions and billions of animals every year. So the question is, how should we be spending our time and our money? Should we be spending our time and our money by promoting humane exploitation, or should we be spending our time and our money by creative, nonviolent, vegan education? And in my judgment, that's a no-brainer. I've been doing this for 25 years now. I've been teaching a course on animal rights basically every year. Anna and I just finished teaching a course in human rights and animal rights this past semester at Rutgers. There is a great deal of interest in veganism and in vegan philosophy. It's just there's really very few people out there who are talking about it. And so I think that, look, tomorrow, the bottom line is, tomorrow, if you've got 2 hours to devote to animal advocacy, what are you going to do? You're going to go to your local college and try to convince kids to eat cage-free eggs, which are ridiculous. I mean, I think cage-free eggs The only difference between battery eggs and cage-free eggs is cage-free eggs represent one big, huge battery cage, basically. Are you gonna encourage them to believe that cage-free eggs represent a morally better solution, or are you going to educate them about why they shouldn't be eating eggs at all? And I think it's a key issue.
Well, my position is you shouldn't be eating eggs at all. You know, if I ruled the world, I would ban meat tomorrow. But, you know, I said I visited a farm the other day. I wouldn't have wanted those animals there as oppressed as they were still slaves. Would I want them in a factory farm condition? I mean,
no, so, but Bob, it's sort of, you know, when I was listening to you describe that, I was thinking about, well, what if you had a situation where you've got a bunch of kids chained. You know, they're making carpets every day, and they're chained for 16 hours a day making carpets. But in a particular factory, they're given a nicer meal, and they're allowed to watch a movie before they go to bed and get up in the morning and are rechained. I mean, you know, it's obviously better to inflict less suffering than more suffering. If you're going to commit a rape, it's obviously better not to beat the victim in addition to raping the victim.
So it's a lesser of two evils, but it's still evil, it's right?
Yes, it's always better to inflict less suffering than more suffering, but once we've come to the conclusion that none of this is necessary, and it isn't necessary, there is no necessity for it. The largest number of animals that we use in this country is for food, and nobody maintains that it's necessary to eat animals for an optimally healthy lifestyle. Indeed, an increasing number of mainstream healthcare people are maintaining it's detrimental to human health, and it's an environmental disaster. There's no necessity for it at all.
So all meat represents unnecessary suffering. Meat and
exactly,
dairy are unnecessary suffering.
Exactly. And so you know, my view is that if tomorrow I'm going to spend X hours of time doing animal advocacy. Going out there talking about veganism, not about cage-free eggs.
Go vegan. Right, definitely. And don't call yourself vegetarian if you're not vegan. You're just pre-vegan. In this world, there are vegans and pre-vegans. And, you know, come to the vegan side. I think we have maybe 30 seconds, Gary. So
I've got a new book coming out. I hope you all will read it. It's called Animals as Persons. Essays in the Abolition of Animal Exploitation. Columbia University will be bringing it out this fall. And visit the website, www.abolitionistapproach.com. That's still a work in progress. That's Randy Sandberg is doing a wonderful job with it, but we're trying to provide a lot of good information. And Bob, I wish you all the best luck keeping your program on Air America, where the progressive community in the United States needs to hear this message.
J-O-V-E-G-E-R.